The Gabby Pinto case, what we know now that we did not know before. This, and we're going to give you some updates on the Lori Vallow case and the Almond Aubrey case. This and more on what some people have termed the fastest minutes in podcasting. Well, hello and welcome to the show today. Wow, a whole lot of things have happened since we last talked. The biggie, of course, is that Brian Laundrie, the most wanted man in America for the past 5 weeks or so, well, he's been found. Well, at least his skeleton remains has been found. You see, just this last week and the week before, I had predicted where I thought Brian Laundrie would be found, and respectfully disagreed with Dog the Bounty Hunter and John Walsh. You see, they both did not believe that Brian was still in the reserve. And yet there was, not very far from the entrance to the park, there he was. So the first thing we know that we did not know before, for sure, well, just like I said last week, the most complex cases sometimes have a simple answer. Brian parked his car, opened the door with his backpack in hand, walked into the park, never to return again. But there are far more things we do not know now about this case that we did not know, and we're going to be going over those things in just a moment. But first, some updates on coming court cases. The court case of Lori Vallow and Almond Aubrey. You see, Almond Aubrey was 25 years of age when he was shot and killed while he was out jogging back on February the 23rd in 2020. That was near Brunswick, Georgia, that is. You see, they're selecting jury now for that trial, and they're having a difficult time finding jurors to sit in the trial. That's for the three men that have been charged with the killing. Now, the one that's doing the shooting, well, he's claimed self-defense. Now, get this, hundreds of people have been summoned, and from those people, 60 people have been questioned. That's since Monday. And many of them have said they've already formed strong opinions about the case. Or maybe they know the defendants. And some are yet scared to sit on the jury. Now, you see, of all these hundreds of people, can you believe that of all these hundreds of people, only 23 have been selected for continued consideration? And this is for a jury of 12 members and 4 alternates. Judge Timothy Walmsley, he seemed a little frustrated at the slow pace of the review, and the judge, well, he says that the selection could go into this week and possibly the week thereafter. You see, in my opinion, this will be a trial that will definitely be decided by the jury, and it will have a whole lot to do with how the attorneys present their case. You see, if they just concentrate on the shooting itself, well, that could go either way. But if they take in the totality and the events leading up to the shooting, well, let's just say this case will gather a whole lot of attention in the coming days. And we do expect to bring you more information as the trial starts. And we're going to also give you an update on the proceedings against the newly most hated woman in America, Lori Vallow Daybell. We're going to update you on that in just a moment. But now it's time for our Courageous Citizen of the Week report. Now, often you hear the phrase that the only thing that can stop a bad man with a gun, well, that's a good man with a gun. And despite claims by many gun control advocates that firearms are rarely used in self-defense, well, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they say differently. They noted in a recent report that almost all major studies on defensive gun uses have concluded, now get this, that Americans use their firearms in self-defense between 500,000 and 3 million times every year. This happened on May the 12th back in Buffalo, South Carolina. A woman fearing for her safety because of a violent ex-husband. Well, she had invited an armed friend to stay at her apartment to protect her and her two children. and when the ex-husband kicked open the front door and opened fire on the woman, well, the armed friend shot and killed him. He killed the ex-husband, who violently broke in and started firing a weapon. This ex-husband was shot by this friend before anyone else could be harmed. Now, police said that they had been searching for the ex-husband for several days because he was wanted on charges of domestic violence and assault. And according to the sheriff there, well, no charges will be filed against the friend of the victim who was there to protect her from this violent man. Now, remember, this ex-husband had a gun and had opened fire. And without this good man with a gun, well, this bad man with a gun could have killed both his ex-wife and children. So our Charlie Crimebuster, courageous citizen of the week, well, it's this friend who went out of his way, risked his own life in order to protect this lady and her children. And this, my friend, is the Charlie Crimebuster, courageous citizen of the week. Now, our focus today is the Gabby Pito story, what we know now that we did not know before. And we're going to get right into that just after our next update about the Lori Vallow-Daybell case. The Lori Vallow-Daybell is perhaps the most hated woman in America right now. Her two kids, JJ and Tylee, were missing for months before they were found buried on her new husband's property. That was Chad Daybell's property. Now, this sad, crazy case, well, it includes reincarnation, walking zombies, I kid you not. And now, the most recently thing that we're hearing is about Lori being evaluated and deemed far unable to stand trial so far. You see, she was committed after a mental health professional determined that Daybell was not competent for trial and could not assist in her defense. Well, Daybell and her husband, Chad Daybell, well, they're charged with multiple crimes, including conspiracy to commit murder and first-degree murder. The charges are in relation to the deaths of little 7-year-old Joshua J.J. Vallow and 16-year-old Tylee Bryan, two of Lori's kids. And Chad's first wife, Tammy Daybell, is also added to it. And you could add the killing of Charles Vallow, another one of Lori's husbands. Well, now, Chad's trial, the new husband, is expected to take place next year. That's after Judge Boyce ruled that a change of venue was needed. The Idaho Supreme Court approved that move this past Wednesday. Now prosecutors want to try these two together for their participation in their crimes, but Chad's attorney, well, he wants to separate the cases. It could just be that Daybell's lawyer already has information, well, that Chad's new wife in his doomsday club, well, she's now attempting to switch the blame to Chad for the murders of her children and Chad's deceased wife. Of course, she's going to have a hard time putting blame on Chad for the shooting of her deceased husband, Charles Vallow. You see, he was shot by Lori's spiritual hitman, Alex Cox, who, guess what? Well, he's deceased as well. So here we have a woman who's connected to not one death, but at least four others, and now she's seeking an insanity defense. You know, my friend, I kind of like what Susan McFarland said. She responded to an article about the closed hearing regarding Lori's mental condition. Well, here's what Susan said, and I'm quoting her words. Quote, "I believe she's faking it. I saw a video of her saying that if a plan she had already devised did not work, well, she would fake being crazy." I am paraphrasing. "She may have mental issues, but I believe she is competent to stand trial. Other evaluations prove she did not have mental issues, at least those that rise to a legal definition, in my opinion." Susan went on to say this, and I like these words, "She doesn't need meds. She needs a swift kick and an Oscar." Well, I might add along with that, Susan, she needs a guilty verdict and the death penalty. By the way, we have podcasts to get you up to date with both of these newsworthy coming trials. Just go to charliecrimebuster.com and click on Charlie Shows, and you can get up to date. Now, our main focus today is the Gabby Pito case and what we know now that we did not know before. First, we do know that both of these people that were missing have been found, but unfortunately not alive. Gabby was missing for at least 3 to 4 weeks before she was found. Brian, something like 5 weeks. And while this case took the country by storm and became perhaps the most talked about case in the shortest amount of time, that was largely due to her, Gabby's, own social media presence and media coverage. It did, by the way, open America's eyes to the fact that a whole lot of people who are missing do not get due coverage. You see, the publicity around this case has also raised questions about the public's outsized interest in Pito's case. You see, according to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, well, over 20,000 people are currently missing in the United States. And some of those also vanished during visits to national parks. Criminologists and academics, they have all said that Pito case reveals a lot about what leads certain missing persons case to dominate public awareness. That, while others remain relatively obscure. Criminologists say that one reason for the surge of publicity around Pito's disappearance is her race and her age. They went on to say that the vast majority of people who go missing and are murdered are not young white females, but people of color. Maybe we ought to each ask ourselves, how often do you hear about a person of color gone missing? Well, as the frenzy around the case has mounted, well, news outlets, they're now reporting that Pito vanished in Wyoming. And some may not know that that same area in Wyoming, 700 indigenous people, primarily girls, have disappeared over the last decade. Did you hear that number? Over 700. Yet none of those generated the same social media attention or the news coverage. We do know now that there are a lot of missing people who unfortunately did and do not have the help of social media and main media outlets to help their case. Now, we've also come to realize how domestic violence impacts the lives of so many. Some psychological research, well, it's indicated that women engage with true crime, now get this, to learn the warning signs and safety tips about how to prevent an assault and to avoid a potentially dangerous partner. More than half of female murder victims from 2003 to 2014, more than half, were killed by intimate partners, often following a long, escalating pattern of abuse. Someone said, quote, I think true crime in general is a way for victims of intimate partner violence. Well, it's a way for them to share and educate their friends and family about what they've gone through. So, my friend, we do now. We do now know the serious consequences of domestic violence. So now let's get into the case and the facts that we do not know that we did not know before. First, now knowledge has come to surface of how Brian Laundry was under surveillance before he was missing. You see, it appears from reports that several surveillance cameras were placed around the Laundry home to hopefully catch images of the coming and going of both the family and Brian. One of them, well, it was even placed on a neighbor's property to view the back side of the Laundry home. You know, I said all along that there's a reason. There's a reason the search was focused on the greater Carlton Reserve area. That's rather than the DeSoto campground in Pinellas County. That was where Dog the Bounty Hunter had his splash in the media dive to keep relevant in the news. We see it appears now that law enforcement knew all along. They knew all along that Brian had returned with his family from that campground in Pinellas County. And while now we do not know how or if he slipped through the camera surveillance to the reserve back on September, we do know from reports something else of importance. You see, people have asked why the Laundry family waited until the 17th to report that Laundry had not returned home from his hiking trip. Well, now Now we have knowledge that they did contact authorities way back on the 13th, and they had mentioned that Landry had not returned. His attorney had contacted police. Now, we do not know if authorities encouraged the family to file a missing person report at that time. Maybe they were just waiting to see if he returned. But we do know now that the parents did go to the reserve and they looked for Brian prior to the 17th. They had even kept the vehicle parked in an unauthorized area, hoping that Brian would return back to the car and come back home. So, it's evident now that the reports that the family had slipped him away from the campground in DeSoto to a life on the run, well, it's just not true. Facts do not support that theory. Again, I say over and over again, law enforcement would not spend $1 million searching an area that they did not have reason to believe that Brian was there. So you're probably asking along with others, first, why did they not find him during the search? And maybe, second, if the parents were able to lead them to the area they thought he might be found at, why didn't they tell him earlier? Well, let's take the second part of the question first. Why didn't they tell them earlier? Well, accordingly now we know things that we did not know before. You see, Brian's parents did indeed point the authorities to the area where his remains were found. Way early on, they told them to search the area of the Environment Park, near the bridge to where the park led to the Carlton Reserve. In fact, it is reported that Brian was found not even approximately 30 minutes or so from where the vehicle was parked in the entrance to the park area. You see, investigators will be quick to tell you that the area closest to where the person was last known is the best chance of finding one. Thus, you start with the area near the vehicle. So now we're back to the question. Why wasn't his body found early on in the search? And we're going to cover that. But now it's time for our crazy crook story. As you know, we at Charlie Crimebuster, we do cover some serious dark areas when it comes to crime. So we always try to take a brief break from those subjects, and we try to replace it with a somewhat humorous crazy crook story. You see, it also serves as a reminder that it's never wise to go against law and order. This story involves two men who were charged with drug trafficking. And you know, my friend, according to this story, well, they could have done a better job hiding their wares, that is, rather than using a package that was actually, get this, labeled, quote, bag full of drugs. Florida authorities say that Ian Simmons and Joshua Reinhart, both 34 years of age, well, they were pulled over in Santa Rosa County. That was after a trooper clocked them going 95 mile per hour on Interstate 10. That's there in Florida's panhandle. That was according to a Florida Highway Patrol arrest report. Hey, I don't know about you, but I would think twice before speeding at high excessive speed with illegal narcotics in my car. Well, at the traffic stop, the trooper there, he determined that Reinhart was the subject of an active felony warrant. That was for violation of probation, another reason not to speed. Well, the trooper requested backup, and a Santa Rosa County Sheriff's deputy arrived to assist. And he had his trusty canine there, and that canine alerted them to the presence of contraband in the vehicle. That's what the arrest warrant said. Well, both the men were taken into custody, and they were taken to jail. They were charged with drug trafficking. You see, maybe you ought to make a note to self. Do not traffic your illegal narcotics in bags labeled bag full of drugs. That's what the deputies wrote on Facebook. And then they added this. I love this. They said, our canines can read. So now our question is, how did authorities miss the remains of Brian Laundrie? Especially when they searched the area where his remains and personal items were found. Well, the answer, my friend, is pretty simple. You live here in Florida, where I do. You see, we have a lot of wetlands in the state. In fact, we're pretty much a body of land almost surrounded by water and lots of rain and marsh areas. We are now being told that the area where the remains and personal items were found, well, it was covered with water almost chest high. Now imagine this, searching in such an area where alligators, poisonous snakes, and other wild animals live. My friend, bring the best hunting dogs, the most professional searchers in the world, and it would be easy not to be able to locate anything in that type of environment. Now keep in mind, we're not talking about clear water, but black, dark water. It's much like the finding of little Kaylee Anthony, who was found down the road from her house after the waters had receded. She was found from a meter man. And one of those first items that was found, a dry bag, well, that was found when Brian's dad looked in the area where he first told cops to look. Cops on the scene apparently located also a backpack and some body remains. Now remember that terminal images from aerial views, drones, helicopters, airplanes, it would not sense heat from a dead body. So my friend, this idea that parents would plant evidence in this case, well, it's really ridiculous. You see, the police were there with them. Cameras were following them. And what parent would you know that would carry skeleton remains of their child around them just to plant evidence? You see, my friend, my opinion is we watch far too many Lifetime movies and we want unrealistic conclusions to our theories. Sometimes, yes, it's just as simple. Just as simple as Brian strangling Gabby to death, comes home to Florida, walks into the woods, and kills himself. We now do know it was indeed Brian. He was identified from his dental records. Now we all wish that Gabby's family could have had justice in the court of law. We wish they could know what happened to their daughter. How could such a beautiful daughter, so full of life, lose it in such a way? And yet maybe there are other things we do not know that we will one day know. You see, because along with that backpack and the dry bag that were located, well, we now know there was a notebook. Now, what was written in that notebook? You see, it could reveal about both how Gabby and Brian died. It could have had a written confession. He could have written a suicide note. He could have recorded his moods to let us know what was going on in his mind. So rest assured, my friend, that the best minds and scientific tools will be used to cipher anything written, even if the notebook was damaged by water and the environment around it. Hopefully it was in the dry bag. We have not yet been told the condition of that notebook or what that notebook can, if any, reveal about its contents. But let's hope for some closure for Gabby's parents. They certainly deserve it. So these are things that we know now that we did not know. And yet, one more important thing. Please know that law enforcement can deter crime, but it can't prevent crime. You see, most of the time when cops are called to the scene, something has already gone bad. We usually end up at the scene after the fact. It is law enforcement, that's the term, not law prevention. You see, that's the main focus of law enforcement, to enforce the law. You see, sadly, even if they had arrested Brian back at the Moab traffic stop for assault, which others say could have been done or should have been done, even if they had done that, that does not mean that this would not have happened. Cops arrest people all the time for domestic violence, and sometimes over and over again, and yet people are still hurt and die at the hands of an abuser. You see, as I said in a recent podcast, it would be great if cops had a time machine to go back in time and crystal balls that would accurately predict the future. But cops have neither. and will always be limited when it comes to preventing crime. So, my friend, we need to make better choices about the people we allow into our lives. And when we find that person displaying signs of abuser, well, we need to get help. We need to get out. We need to get away. So if there's a lesson here, it's this. Teach your children about the importance of making the right kind of choices, and let them know you are there any time they need you. For my friend, whether they are 5 years of age or 25 years of age, they need to know that they can come to you anytime, and you will move heaven and earth to protect them. And let me remind you, there is a place you can call. 1-800-799-7233. 1-800-799-7233. You've heard it often on this program. It is the National Domestic Abuse Hotline. You see, statistics tells me that there are several of you listening to me right now that are, number one, either in a possible abusive relationship, or number two, you know someone who is. Do not try to handle that yourself. Get help. Now, there are many who might ask if this is it for the investigation. Is it all over? Well, unless additional information comes to light of other crimes, it may appear that there will not be additional investigation, particularly from the FBI. But there is still the matter of the death for Brian that is to be considered, which we may or may not know in the future. That is, until authorities have used any and all information and evidence they have at hand. Now, I've also been told that Brian's parents are bracing themselves to the very likelihood that their son took his own life. Not easy for any parent to take, I'm sure. So, in conclusion, let me say that sometimes danger comes to us from areas we least expect it. It is when we get so comfortable with those we're surrounded with, and in the areas that sometimes we fail to catch warning signs that should put us on alert. So be careful you don't fall into such complacency that you do not recognize potential dangers to yourself. Put your mind in an eternal open mind to possible dangers and become conscious of what is around you at all times. So until this time next time, this is Charlie Crimebuster reminding you, be safe, be alert, for the life you save, well, it just may be your very own. Thank you.